You're listening to Greater LA, KCRW's show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis, and today, let's get a drink in Boyle Heights.
There you go.
Oh, yes, pass it on.
There's a thumping, pulsating bass coming just off of Marietta and Whittier. It's coming from a place called the Boulevard, or as the sign says, the BLVD, an unassuming dive bar, a small pint-sized hall. There are a couple of TVs on the wall, Coronas and Micheladas are passed around, and there's a piñata in the corner. It's a pretty low-key place. But every other Friday night, the walls of this place swell with a raucous crowd.
If anybody in here has never seen a rap battle, y'all about to be surprised. I guarantee you, you're going to want to get closer to feel their sweat. This is going to be like a Beyonce concert. You're going to want to feel the sweat, I swear to God.
The noise is brought to you by Sella. That's Southeast L.A. hip-hop. They're a collective that hosts nights of expression here. Poetry, spoken word, and most popular, rap battles. KCRW's Angel Carreras went down to the Boulevard to see how one of those nights plays out.
Tonight, it's Pump Gatto versus Kemp. This is the final round of a months-long battle tournament. Kemp is lean like a basketball player. Pump Gatto is a big dude, shaped like an offensive lineman. Here's Kemp sizing up his opponent.
I mean, just look at that gut. It's Tina the Talking Tummy. You think you special because the crowd be laughing at your jokes, but ain't fat people supposed to be funny? I mean, just looking at you is a bar in itself. And I probably shouldn't say bar because they'll think I'm talking about chocolate and start feeling itself.
And here is Pump Gatto's response.
You battle me, you might lose. Yeah, I'm spitting typhoons. I just took your life, watch me walk through. You a ghost now, but I'm the one that's gonna haunt you.
Basically, this is two guys straight up belittling each other. And by the way, these are some of the very few things we can air from that night. This is public radio, after all. Most of it sounds like this.
I'ma put hands on this. I'm a gynecologist.
And the crowd loves it. It's a verbal boxing match. When a zinger hits, the crowd oohs and ahs, collectively shifting their bodies in reaction to a heavyweight hit. There's rules, too.
All right, first of all, man, we want to see clarity, man. Clarity, we need to be able to hear everything you're saying. You can't be mumbling through your rounds. You're most likely going to lose a lot of points if you're doing that. All right, number two is creativity, man. Creativity, we want to hear some new, fresh. We don't want to hear the same from the last rap battle, none of that bull. All right, number three is stamina, man. You need to be able to finish a round. If you do not finish a round, you will most likely lose. All right, number four is crowd work, crowd interaction, man. If the crowd is not responding to your bars, you are most likely losing the round. All right, number five is bullseye, man. You need to be able to address your competitor directly. You can't be rapping up and down talking about all this other that nobody gives about. You need to be able to address your competitor directly. And last but definitely not least is no physical contact. I get it. Y'all been thinking about each other for the last week. I get it. Y'all have each other in y'all mind. Y'all miss each other. I get it. But without further ado, if y'all ready, let's get ready to rumble.
This may all seem negative, but Darmedius Rod sees it differently. He's one of the founders of Sella Hip Hop.
You're basically being ridiculed in front of the people. And you have to just be like, I mean, I know who I am. I don't care what you say. If I'm fat, you say I'm fat, like, I'm fat, you know, whatever. Like, it's cool, you know what I mean? If I'm ugly, if I have a big nose, like, so what? I love my big nose, you know what I mean? I don't know if you know Adrian Brody, but he has a big-ass nose. He still look good, you know what I mean? He rocks it, you know what I'm saying? Like, just be comfortable, you know, with who you are, you know? Fat, skinny, big nose, small nose, like, don't matter. Just love yourself, you know?
Darmedius is 27. He's a lanky guy who keeps his sunglasses on, even at night. He grew up in Southgate and describes his childhood as sad.
I was just done with life. I was like, there's no reason to be alive. Like, life is whack, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was sad, you know what I mean? Like, growing up in the hood was sad, you know? So then I fell very deep in depression and anxiety, and then it forced me to find the solution. It forced me to find something else. Otherwise, that was it. That was the end of the road.
That solution was Southeast Los Angeles hip-hop collective, Sela, a homegrown, welcoming environment for hip-hop lovers. It's, oddly enough, kind of a safe space. Those barbs and quips, ultimately meant to help uplift people, some that grew up like him.
Like, even though I come from the streets, like, I can't have a lot of, like, gang activity at the events, you know what I mean? I can't have people talking about killing each other all the time, you know what I mean? I still wanted people from the streets, you get me? But I wanted people from the streets that are trying to grasp a new perspective on life and not necessarily leaving the streets behind, but, like, embracing it and moving forward with it.
So officially, Sela was on and popping in 2017. So that's like 2 years ago, right? Is it? Yeah. All right.
That's Star Medius' girlfriend and Sela co-founder, Kira Avila.
So we just really decided to start our own platform, just simple as that.
They found a home at this bar, The Boulevard, after bouncing around venues downtown. Attendance has flourished here.
If you create these environments and communities, you remind people that at the end of the day, their struggles are not that real, their burdens are not that heavy, and you're just gonna keep pushing whatever you have inside of you. And I always believe everyone has something to say. Like, when you grab a mic, everyone has something to say.
A lot of the people here, man, are true hip-hop heads.
Here's Kemp again, the guy with all the fat jokes in tonight's rap battle.
I've been to a lot of places where they only accept people who rap a certain way. Like, they only want boom bap 90s rappers. There's been places I went to where they like, oh, I only want this dude to do trap. But Sela is like all around. They accept everybody for whatever type of music you do, with craft, whatever your craft is, poetry, spoken word, rap, singing, anything you do, they support it. You know what I'm saying?
As their community grows, so does the prize money. Pump Gatto and Kemp are competing tonight to win $1,000. After three rounds, judges analyzed their performance.
His were a lot of one-liners that were all like disses, and they were all consistent. And I think for that reason, the third round.
And then.
So make some noise for the $1,000 winner, Kemp!
Man, bro, it's an amazing feeling, bro. Definitely was expecting to come in to win, but it still doesn't compare to actually winning. You know what I'm saying? Wanting to win and going in there to win, man, is a different feeling from when you actually do it and it's actually over and you've been crowned.
Next year, Darmedius and the crew plan to expand to more venues, grow the hip-hop community, and yes, continue those rap battles. For KCRW, I'm Angel Carreras.
Coming up, Hollywood assistants say they take a lot of abuse for very little money. How does that affect the pipeline to the A-listers? You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
You're back with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Oscar nominations are out, and the issue of diversity is again ready for its close-up. Only men got nominations for Best Director, and in quite a few categories, including Best Supporting Actor, all the nominees are white. But dig a little deeper. The people who support the A-list nominees, these are the folks who schedule the meetings and make calls and get coffee, they can even endure abuse, at least that's what the allegations are. But inspired by the Me Too movement, some Hollywood assistants have started banding together, demanding better treatment and better wages. John August is a writer in the industry. He co-hosts the podcast Script Notes. Hey, John.
Hey, Steve. Pleasure to be here.
And Jerrica Long is a former assistant, now a showrunner's assistant over at CBS. Jerrica, thanks for being with us as well.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
I want to start with you, Jerrica, because you worked as an assistant over at CAA.
Yes.
Big talent agency. You were one of the few women of color in the position.
Yes.
What was your day-to-day like over there?
Well, I was a floater. So, like, I'm on reserve when, like, assistants go out of town or, like, an assistant leaves abruptly. You have to cover the desk and work for an agent. To be honest, it's a hard job. You never know what you're coming into every day because you're randomly assigned to an agent when needed. So you're just basically, you're sitting in what we call the dungeon, which is like a room off to the side where all the floaters sit in, and they call you out whenever they need you. And you're just like, you're rolling calls, you're doing whatever the assistant would do on that desk.
And what was that like for you? What was it like being a floater?
Oh, it's horrible. it's one of the worst jobs I've ever had in my entire life. Yeah, just because you're dealing with so many different personalities and like you're walking into a fire not knowing what's going. Like you have no idea what you're walking into.
All right. So you're no longer there. Did you leave?
Yes, I quit. I quit abruptly.
Abruptly? What happened?
Well, I was actually interviewing for a desk and I was in negotiations with an agent and I overheard other assistants talking about if slavery was present today, how they would own slaves. Oh. And I immediately reached out to HR. And I told them what happened.
Wait. Like, somebody said that out loud?
Yes. Yes. It was an ongoing conversation between a group of white assistants about how they would own slaves and if it was possible.
Obviously no longer possible.
Right.
Yeah.
Thankfully. Yes.
Wow. John, you are, I don't even know how you top that, John. You are partially credited with bringing the predicament of Hollywood assistants to light on your podcast. On Script Notes, why did you want to tackle this issue?
Craig Mazin, my co-host, and I, we were talking about the issues that we had sort of not paid enough attention to over the past few years. So Me Too was an obvious example of that, where we were aware of some of the issues, but we weren't talking about it enough. And so we asked on the air, what issues are we not talking about enough? And a listener wrote in and said, hey, you need to talk more about how the lack of diversity in Hollywood is really directly attributable to how little we are paying assistants. So the impetus behind this Pay a Hollywood moment was really looking at how low assistant pay is hurting the industry overall.
I thought that, you know, didn't the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, didn't they come across, like, there was the hashtag a few years back, Oscars So White. I thought they were going to try and bring more diversity, bring more people of different cultures and backgrounds into the Academy to be able to vote on nominations. Isn't that what they were doing to respond to Oscars So White?
Well, I think there were some changes that happened in the Academy that were probably, you know, somewhat effective. The thing you have to keep in mind, Steve, is that you can't have, you know, a bunch of, you know, diverse writers and directors and producers if those people have never been able to start their careers. And that's really what an assistant job is like in Hollywood, is that a first step in your career. Most of the people who are winning those Oscars, they started as assistants someplace, and they could afford to do that because they generally had support networks that could get them there, or because the costs of living when they started were so much lower. I started as an assistant in 1995, and I could afford to have a one-bedroom apartment in West Hollywood on what I was bringing home as an assistant. That is absurd luxury today. Like, no one can afford to take those jobs for so little money.
So what happened, John? What happened in the years since? If you were making quote unquote decent money right back in the day, and now you're not. I mean, is it a cost of living change? Are they paying less?
It's both of those factors. So the cost of living in Los Angeles have gone up just astronomically. And, you know, obviously that affects everyone living in the city, but when you look at assistants, they are expected to come in here with a college degree. They are expected to have a wardrobe that matches this professional environment. A car, they're supposed to be able to provide their own transportation so they can run around and do all these trips for the people they're working for. They're supposed to be caught up on all the movies, on all the streaming services. So they have these expenses that are fixed, and yet their money is not going up. And so we see that so often, floaters like Jerrica, they're making minimum wage or just above minimum wage, and it's very basically impossible for them to bring in enough money so that they can do the job they want to do. So they end up taking second jobs, or they rely on their families for support. And the people who have families who can support them are not the diverse, you know, crop of new people that we want to have in this industry.
I don't want to confess to overhearing your conversation, but I overheard you, Jerrica, tell John, that you had another job, a second job. Has that been the case for a while?
Yes, I actually have three jobs. I've never not had to have at least two additional jobs to be an assistant.
Talk to me a little bit about, because we talk about diversity at the lowest levels and how sort of, you know, what's the old saying, a rising tide raises all boats, right? I mean, it's like, so if you've got, I mean, if you've got diversity down at the lower levels, then maybe the diversity will work its way up. Do you think that's something that can happen? Or, I mean, what's going on right now as far as Hollywood assistants go?
I don't think so. There's not really initiatives for advancement for people to get even to move up. Like, I have several friends who are of color who can't find a CE job or can't find that next job after being an assistant for over 7-8 years. It's next to impossible to try to get to the next role in your career.
What's a CE job?
Like creative executive. It's usually like your first thing to do before you become like an actual like director of development or anything like that.
You think there's racism?
Oh, it's definitely racism. It's racism. It's classism. It's nepotism. It's all the isms. It's everything that's holding you back from making your next leap in your career.
John, you and a member of the Writers Guild of America West, the board of directors, Liz Alper, you guys put a survey together for assistants to participate in. It was tagged Pay Up Hollywood, and I want to talk about some of the findings, one of which was about money, that the majority of assistants make less than $50,000 a year. How do these low wages affect the pipeline of assistants and getting into the industry by being an assistant?
Well, that first job, if you can't afford to take that first job, you're going to switch to a different industry. You're going to do something else. I compare Jerrica's experience to my experience. And so Jerrica's talking about her three jobs. I had one job. It was a huge job as an assistant, but I could actually have the time to write. And so if I get all this extra time to write and sort of build up that library of scripts and sort of do all that work, I get ahead of Jerrica because, you know, she's having to do these extra jobs.
There's also another finding that there's physical abuse. What was it? More than 100 of 1,500 respondents reported that a boss had thrown something at them.
Yes. And so what you're describing, it sort of sounds like hazing. And I think the people who have these jobs right now would say like, oh, I went through that when I was an assistant too. I had stuff thrown at me. It was never okay then. It's not okay now. And I think assistant pay is related though, because how much you're paying somebody really is a factor in how you're valuing them. And if you're not paying them enough that they can make a livable wage, you're going to be more likely to throw something at them. I think it all fits together.
John, what's the next step for you guys? I mean, where do you take this? How far do you take this? And given this morning's Oscar nods, I mean, obviously the work is not done.
The next steps, I think, are continuing to bring awareness to the issue to make sure that ignorance is never an excuse for sort of why these practices continue. We're talking about sort of more direct support for assistants who are experiencing these problems right now. Basically, how do you deal with abusive bosses? How do you communicate what's actually happening? You know, what are strategies for dealing with HR? We're also doing some quiet outreach to different organizations and different companies saying like, hey, this is how much you're actually paying your assistants and this is why it's a problem. And we've gotten some movement from, especially from agencies in terms of paying people more. And that's really where this has to start.
John August is a writer and co-host of the podcast Script Notes. Jerrica Long is a showrunner's assistant over at CBS. I want to thank you both, John and Jerrica.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. In 2017, the state legislature passed the California Values Act, SB 54, also known as the Sanctuary State Law. Some cities felt like Sacramento overreached. Huntington Beach was one of those cities. It sued, saying it shouldn't have to abide by the Sanctuary State Law, and it won. But on Friday, a three-judge panel of California's 4th District Court of Appeal unanimously overturned the lower court's ruling. It said, quote, We hold SB 54 constitutional as applied to charter cities because it addresses matters of statewide concern, including public safety and health, effective policing, and protection of constitutional rights, end quote. Now, it's Monday. Gustavo Arellano is here with KCRW's Orange County Line for the OC perspective. Hello, Gustavo.
Hola, Steve.
Remind us what the sanctuary state law actually does.
So the sanctuary state law does what the sanctuary city movement of the past 15 years does, but on a far bigger scale. In essence, it severely limits cooperation between state law enforcement agencies and even city law enforcement agencies with ICE when it comes to anyone being gotten for an infraction or a misdemeanor. You still allow that cooperation for serious felonies, but other than that, there's not supposed to be any communication between ICE and law enforcement at all.
Is that what Huntington Beach's argument was against the law?
Well, it's interesting with Huntington Beach because it has a couple things going for them. The very specific technical argument they said was, as a charter city, we don't have to follow the statewide law because charter cities, anything that's a charter city has a little bit more ruling in its own city affairs than in statewide affairs. But really, we're talking about Huntington Beach. This is a conservative city. This is a city that proudly wears that label. And it's also a city that's like almost in a tug of war with Gavin Newsom and the rest of California. Last year, the state of California also sued Huntington Beach saying, hey, you're not building enough affordable housing. So it's a tit for tat. And in this case, Huntington Beach said, we're not going to follow what California wants us on sanctuary state policies.
All right. Tug of war, tit for tat. One tug was Huntington Beach won the first round of its lawsuit, right? That was Orange
yeah.
County Superior Court Judge James Crandall. What did he have to say in his opinion?
It was really interesting, not just in the opinion, but also in the conversation he had during open court arguments. He really saw this as the sanctuary state law was tyranny against the small guys, the little guys, the cities who maybe don't want to follow a statewide policy. But at the same time, he said, I know this is a very important case. This is going to have statewide, if not national ramifications. But at the end, I have to side with the little guys on this case, in this case being Huntington Beach.
All right. And then the other tug in the other direction was the Court of Appeal, right? And what did the Court of Appeal have to say?
The Court of Appeal said, hey, Judge Crandall, you're wrong. SB 54, the sanctuary state law, is totally constitutional when it comes to charter cities. Charter cities, even though they have a little bit more governance over and autonomy over city affairs, a sanctuary state thing is very much applies on a local level as much as a state level. So you have these city charter cities who might be opposed to SB 54, they're going to have to fall in line.
I know, Gustavo, Huntington Beach isn't the only city in OC taking a stand. I know Newport Beach, Fountain Valley, Los Alamitos, even Orange County itself has taken a stand against SB 54, right?
Oh, yeah. No, a lot of cities in 2018, they passed symbolic resolutions saying, or not even symbolic, just saying, hey, we're not going to follow SB 54. We are not a sanctuary state city, let alone a sanctuary city. And so they were hoping that Huntington Beach would win on their case. Now, no other city is suing, although the ACLU is suing the city of Los Alamitos, who was the first one to pass one of these resolutions, although that case has been stayed until there was some resolution going with this Huntington Beach affair. What's going to happen next, probably, of course, Huntington Beach, they view this really as a mission, as a crusade. So they're most likely going to appeal to the next level, which is going to be the California Supreme Court.
And then the California Supreme Court, if they lose there, then it goes to federal courts beyond that, right?
Then it goes to the big leagues at that point.
Would they take it all the way to the United States Supreme Court, do you think? Is this a political statement for Huntington Beach?
Again, it's very much so. Whether you agree with it or not, the city of Huntington Beach really prides itself on, as what they say, is a law and order city that is against big governance. The attorney, what's interesting about Huntington Beach is it's a city that elects its own city attorney. So the city attorney here is Michael Gates, and he's taken a lot of these issues, more conservative-leaning issues over the years. And to his credit, he's actually won more than a few of them in court. So, of course, at the end, the city does have to pay for its legal bills. As it stands right now with the California Court of Appeals, they ordered Huntington Beach, hey, you have to pay the cost of the state for appealing this. So last we know, Michael Gates said, well, I have to go talk to the rest of the city council, but this is an issue that should be fought. We shouldn't just leave it to a court of appeals and say, hey, you know, the lower courts was wrong, we're right.
Gustavo Arellano with KCRW's Orange County Line. Gustavo, thanks.
Gracias.
That's going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, in some places, a coffee shop has come to exemplify change, gentrification, In South LA, who are those new shops targeting to come through their doors? We're online at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Subscribe to the podcast. Share your thoughts with us as well. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for your ears and for your time today. Have yourself a great Monday.